jittery, it was a challenge to unlock my screen. It was Jess. Are you going to Stella's party tonight? Speaking of another universe. After school, Rayanne welcomed me inside, and we sat in her dad's cramped home office, the most private place in her house, which wasn't saying much. Her parents liked to dive bomb in on us every few minutes. So what happened? Rayanne was anxious to know. I get that every day or two I have some ridiculous story to tell you about things you can't see or hear or anything, and you always seem to believe me, which is so awesome. But I have to warn you, Rayanne, this is heavy. She nodded. I told her everything I'd seen, and she buried her face in her hands. I can't think about that pit. It's too terrible. I wrapped my arm around her. When she eventually removed her hands, I could see that she'd teared up. Molech, you think he's Satan? Whoever he is, I said, we have to stop him. Figure out what he's planning and put an end to it. Not that I'd been even remotely successful at stopping creepers up to that point, but it wasn't in my nature to wave the white flag. I was prepared for Rayanne to start preaching at me about how we needed to ask for God's help. Instead, she leaned close. So close, I thought she might kiss me after all. Think how much more helpful I could be if I could see, like you do. No! I yelled so loud that Mrs. Griner came running around the corner. It took Rayanne a few minutes to convince her that we were fine. I've already told you, I said when we were finally by ourselves again. Going to the well is never an option, much less drinking from it. But we could be a strong team and... Rayanne, listen to me. I lowered to my knee in front of her chair, my hands on her shoulders. That water will make you really, really sick, like deathly ill. You can never drink it, ever, okay? A blank stare. Promise me you'll never try to find it. More staring. Rayanne? Okay, yes, I understand. I sat in the chair beside her. But I'm not afraid, she said. I grabbed her hand. I know, you're a very brave person. Which is why I think you need me to be able to see. I need you to keep your promise. We left it at that. My mom eventually texted and asked me to come home. I wasn't sure what that was about. Rayanne walked me to my motorcycle, and we noticed a train of cars lining the curb at the end of her street. Stella Murphy's party, she said. I saw Dan go inside Stella's house, some girl clinging to the back of his polo shirt. What did Jess see in him? I gave Rayanne a hug and thanked her for being the best friend anyone could ever ask for. But I wanted to say more. Rayanne? She looked up at me through her long eyelashes. You're the only thing that's right in my world. The best thing that's happened to me. She blushed. Look, I get it if you're not ready to commit to me, but I can't help it. I'm committed to you, Ray. Another hug. The one place I felt at home. When I got to my house, my mom was waiting for me, a home-cooked meal on the table. Something was definitely up. Everything okay? I eyed her. I hope so. What do you mean? I sat across from her, trying to push the image out of my mind of her trapped in that pit someday. She took a bite of her chicken, washed it down with her wine, then sat back in her chair, some silence. I've arranged a meeting for you with a good defense lawyer. Thank you. Another silent pause. Son, you know I'll stand by you through thick and thin, no matter what. I nodded. But I need the truth. I'm not accusing you of harming those boys, but whatever happened, I need you to tell me right now. This wasn't like her, insisting on getting to the bottom of a situation. But then again, I'd never been a murder suspect before. I wanted to come clean. I seriously did. I was sick of deception, tired of having to spin my web of careful lies. But she refused to be open and honest with me. As long as I could remember, she dodged me every time I pressed her, changed the subject, or shut me down completely. This wasn't fair of her, demanding honesty of me. All we did was play basketball, Mom, then chill in the woods a while. That's it, I swear. I know. Like mother, like son. I tried to watch TV to take a load off my mind, but it didn't stop the images of suffering, the memory of Megan's terrified face. Stella's party crossed my mind. I started thinking maybe that's where the creeper plot against my classmates was set to go down. I texted Jess. "You at the party?" She replied, "Almost there." No sense in warning her to stay home. I had a choice, to sit there and keep mulling things over, or to get up and try to make myself useful. I threw on my black Converse and texted Rayanne, stopping by Stella's to check on things. "I'll tell you if I need you, okay?" I knocked on Stella's door. Would they let me in? My reputation wasn't great these days. Some girl opened the door, and the smell of beer, weed, and creepers assaulted me. The typical party scene, plus chains and cords and evil beings. The lights were dim, but I could see well enough to spy Dan in the corner with a girl on his lap. No sign of Jess yet. A guy from my third period class struck up a conversation about college over the loud music, and I maintained that I was going pre-med. He was quick to say he was headed to A&M in the fall to be an engineer. It seemed like forever since I'd thought about career plans. I didn't see any creeper activity beyond the usual, but things got interesting when I stopped by a group gathered around a coffee table, playing with a Ouija board. My mom had always warned me to stay away from those things. I could see now that she was right. Two girls were touching the pointer, giggling and gasping as it slid across the board, spelling out one girl's middle name. People looked on, debating whether it was the girls or ghosts moving it. "Neither," I said. "It's demons." Gazing into hell's terrors has a way of making you want to cut through the fluff and tell it like it is. "Shut up," one of the girls said, the bigger airhead of the two. I leaned over and spoke in her ear. "It's yanking a new squirming cord out of your head right now to abuse you with whenever it wants." A fifth cord added to the four she already had. "You're sick." "These are enlightened spirits who've crossed over," the other girl said. "They don't want to hurt us." "Really?" I almost laughed. "The one pushing the pointer is named Pain, and it's staring straight at you." Of course it gnashed its teeth at me. "How would you know?" a guy said to me. A dozen people were watching the conversation go down. I didn't bother with an explanation. They were all shaking their heads at me anyway. I walked away and scooped a few M&Ms out of a snack bowl, then spotted Jess coming my way through the crowd, being careful not to spill her drink. When Jess finally made it to me, Dan walked up behind her and put his arm around her neck like he hadn't just been all over another girl. "What's this psycho doing here?" he said, eyes on me, his typical arrogant smirk on his face. "Looking for his next victim?" Jess averted her eyes to the floor. Dan opened his big mouth again, talking loudly. "Everyone, I'd stay on alert if I were you. We've got a murderer among us." He was in my face. I stepped within a centimeter of his. "Watch it, Dan. You could be next." I get that I'd technically just threatened his life and, in a sense, admitted I was responsible for Walton Marshall's deaths, but I'd gone from disliking this guy to despising him so bad that I could actually envision myself making him suffer. He pressed his finger in my chest, then made a gunshot sound under his breath, motioning like he'd just pulled a trigger. "Stop it, Dan," Jess said. He pulled her away from me into the crowd. I waited for the right moment, and found it when Dan stepped outside with some guys. "Jess, let's leave. Don't stay here with him." "I'm sorry about earlier. He can be really mean sometimes." Her speech was a slurred mess. "You can't drive like this. I'll take you home." She took another sip of her drink, her dark hair plastered to her clammy neck, trailing down to her low-cut blouse. "Dan's taking me." I was ready to walk away at that point. I'd done my best. But something caught my attention when Jess's midriff peeked out between the bottom of her shirt and her low-waisted jeans. It was strange and brilliant and alarming. And coming from her. I bent down and pulled her shirt up an inch, then stared at her midsection. "What are you doing?" She laughed. I grabbed her hand and led the way through the noisy, overcrowded hallway into a bedroom, closing the door behind us. "Jess, you have to leave with me. We're going, now. And put that drink down." "Why?" She took another big swig, and I grabbed the bottle and set it on top of a tall bookshelf. "Give me that." She did a pathetic jump and reach. "You're always protecting me from nothing." "This isn't about evil beings. It's nothing like that. Don't you know?" "Know what?" Her smile was flirtatious, intoxicated. I blurted it out. "You're pregnant, Jess." She stood there, stunned, mouth open, then burst into laughter. "I am not." She walked over to the bed like the ground was tilted toward it, then turned and fell backward onto the comforter. "And how would you know anyway?" There was a tiny, laser-strong light emanating from her body, her uterus, I guess. It wasn't much bigger than the tip of a fountain pen, but it was as bright as my megawatt flashlight. I sat beside her and hoisted her to an upright position. "It doesn't matter how I know, Jess. I know. You're pregnant. I promise." She got weepy. I wasn't sure if it was the hormones, the alcohol, or that she actually believed me. She put her head on my shoulder. "I've done so many things lately that you would be unhappy about." A tear came streaming down her cheek. "Why are you even talking to me? I sold you out to the police." She looked up, her eyes pitiful and longing. "We can talk about that later. Right now, we've got to leave." She slid her hand across my cheek, then behind my neck, pulling my face close, her lips nearly touching mine. The smell of alcohol on her breath made me want to puke. The door flew open. Given my luck, I figured it was Dan. I turned. Rayanne. Chapter 35. Rayanne! I called to her, but she had already shoved her way out the front door. "Wait!" I rushed to catch up. She bolted on foot toward her house. I sprinted until I was close enough to reach out and touch her. "Rayanne, stop!" She finally did, and we both stood there, sucking air under the night sky. "Ray, that wasn't what you think." "Let me guess. You were saving her from a brutal attack." I'd never seen her cheeks that red, that kind of anger in her eyes. "No, it was something else. I'll tell you if you'll just calm down." "No, Owen, I won't. You promise not to hide things from me, but you keep sneaking around with Jess." She pushed against my chest. "Just say it. You want to be with her. I don't care." She turned and kept stomping down the street. I followed. "If you don't care, why don't you stop and let me explain?" She spun around and raged at me. "Because I can't stand liars. And that's what you are, Owen Edmonds. Don't deny it." She went back to stomping. "I'm such an idiot. I think I believed your stories." Her voice cracked, the pain seeping through her tantrum. Creepers? Shackles? Rayanne, please, there's an explanation. She ranted in my face again, her eyes narrow and disgusted. You aren't committed to me. You aren't even a loyal friend. I can't believe I took you seriously. That's when the Kingdom of Hate showed up. Three creepers headed right for me. A really bad time to ask Rayanne for help. Hey, I said, let's talk this out at your house. I'm not ready to go home, and I wouldn't let you in anyway. She stopped her angry march and shouted toward the black sky. How could you let someone deceive me again? Are you even there, God? Do you care at all? The creeper trio was closing in fast. I know you don't want to hear this right now, I said, but there's three. Oh, shut up. She stopped under a street lamp, arms crossed. I'm done listening to you. Leave. I recognized Faithless, but its accomplices were new. Betrayal and distrust. They fanned out. But not around me. Rayanne. I went to her. I get that you're angry, but you have to listen to me. Something's happening. Not to me, to you. She stuffed her index fingers inside her ears. Distrust plunged its hand underneath the neckline of its grimy garment and pulled out some sort of burlap sack, dark and dilapidated. Without taking its eyes off Rayanne, it rummaged through the bag, pulling out two chains. It stepped closer, careful not to cross into her light. I said leave. There's three of them, and one has chains. That's enough, Owen. Distrust tossed a chain to each of the creepers on either side of Rayanne. Betrayal went first, locking its wrist inside the menacing cuff, then hoisting the chain in the air, whipping it toward Rayanne. It fell and slammed the pavement. They're after you. She put her flexed hand in my face. Not another word. Faithless tossed its chain at her, too. And finally, after a few attempts, they both managed to whip the links around her throat. The creepers are attacking you. We have to run. Surely her parents' combined light would make a difference. Creepers are afraid of me, remember? Try to keep your story straight. Distrust pulled four cords from the bag, much longer than the ones that hung from people's heads, at least 15 feet long. Then it discarded the shabby sack, tossing it not far from me, and began the sickening process of burrowing the cords, two in each palm. Once the cords were nestled deeply, Distrust swung its bony arms in the air, sending the grisly cords soaring behind Rayanne. They pounded her in the back of the head, and stuck, latching onto her scalp like bloodthirsty leeches. I watched as Rayanne's fractured heart crumbled. Everyone lies to me. She sank to the ground, her hands buried in her hair. I can't trust anyone. Her tearful confession flipped a switch in the alternate world. The three assailants began to moan, a monotone hum that covered me in chills, and more creepers emerged, dozens of them, spilling out of the shadows between houses, crawling from the street gutters, dropping like bats from the dark sky. I crouched down. I know you're upset, but you have to stop this. Stop talking and let me walk you home, please. Don't lecture me, Owen. I thought she might hit me. I can make my own rules. The evil forces were really stirred now. They pressed in close, making a tight circle around us, just beyond her aura, all moaning a morbid one-note chorus with no need to pause for a breath. I couldn't sit there and watch them batter her soul. I rushed to Faithless and read the inscription on the cuff around its wrist. Eye level with me. Who is Tori Deanne Lansing? What? Tori Lansing, do you know her? She was a bully in elementary school. She used to make my life miserable. Why? I charged over to Betrayal and read that cuff, too. Mrs. Griner's name. Okay. Your mom's middle name is Ruth. How do you know that? I slammed on my knees in front of her. Rayanne, those names are on the cuffs, on the chains being used to torment you right now. I squeezed her hands. They're around your neck, and there are cords attached to your head, and tons of creepers in a wall around us right now watching you. I don't know. I pushed back and pounded a fist on the concrete. I'm not lying to you. I was out of options. Then hope shined down on us. I stood, straining to see over the creepers. Sure enough, help was coming, lighting the atmosphere. Seven watchmen dressed for battle were charging toward us. Watchmen, they're here to rescue you, Ray. I counted down the seconds, grinning, ecstatic at what I knew was coming. Creepers squealing, pleading, fleeing the wrath of Rayanne's Avengers, any second now. The three oppressors linked to Rayanne kept up their assault. But the others turned outward, hissing like venomous snakes, assembling tighter around their prey. This was it. Time for the watchmen to rain down judgment. I held my breath. But they slowed their pace. Then stopped completely, glaring down at the mob. Something's wrong, I said. The watchmen, they're standing still. They look frustrated. I lifted my arms. Hey, help! No movement. Please stop, Rayanne said. I looked down and saw she was shivering. I turned to her. I feel awful, she said. I'm so confused and scared. I grabbed her hands and held them to my chest. Rayanne, listen to me. You're playing right into their trap. You've got to stop. Come back to your senses. Remember who you are, what you believe, what you stand for. Can you do that? For me? She closed her eyes and released her head back, a runaway tear traveling down her cheek. Deep breaths, deeper still. Then a nod. Lord, please forgive me for... Instant chaos, so loud and intense that I hunkered down and covered my head. But not for long. I wanted to watch, take it all in. I saw watchmen hurling creepers so hard that some flew 100 feet away. Creepers ran and hid in obvious places, trembling. One tried to float up, but a watchman grabbed its foot right out of the air and slammed the creeper to the cement. It sank into the earth like the pavement was water. It didn't take long for every last one of them to be driven away. I looked back at Rayanne, and the chains and cords were gone. I wish you could have seen that. My arms were raised like an MMA champion. But then I noticed her, sitting still, face to the sky, eyes closed, tearful. The watchmen were still poised for action, looking for stragglers. But one of them stopped and gazed down at Rayanne. He was magnificent, arms and legs like a bronze statue, calf muscles bigger than my head. He crouched and put his hand across his chest. Then he used his other humongous hand to wipe a tear from Rayanne's minuscule cheek with the tip of his finger. I felt it, compassion filling the atmosphere like the warmth of a morning sunrise. I threw myself to the ground beside him, attempting to look into his radiant face. Thank you. Thank you so much. He didn't even glance my way. He and his companions peered into the sky, then charged off in the opposite direction they'd come from. It's over now. I sat next to Rayanne, welcoming the new calm. A quiet, victorious moment. There was no denying that I'd just seen Rayanne's prayer ignite a drastic change in the unseen realm. But was the difference maker the actual prayer or her personal resolve to resist the creeper's manipulation? I also wondered, if lights could be refitted with chains and cords, why hadn't I seen glowing people dragging stuff around? It was worth thinking through. Now just wasn't the time. I told Rayanne about the watchman's affection toward her, and after a while, I told her what really had happened with Jess. pregnancy and all. That's serious. She wiped her cheeks. I'm sorry I freaked out on you. I have a huge fear of being lied to, and sometimes I overreact.
I put my arm around her. What happened to make you so afraid?
She stared at the cement. Lucas told my mom he was having suicidal thoughts, but she didn't want to burden me with the news. My dad thought it was best to tell me, but my mom talked him out of it. I knew Lucas was depressed and seeing a counselor, but I had no idea. She covered her face. I waited. There's so much I would have said and done if I had known. Maybe things would have even turned out differently. I pulled her closer. I've forgiven my mom, but it still hurts sometimes, especially if I think someone is holding out on me again. I'd buried my friends, but never a brother. I ached for her. We sat a while in the silence, my arm tight around her the whole time. What do you think happened tonight? She eventually said, twisting her hair into a knot. With the creepers coming after me. My sweet, trusting Rayanne was back. Creepers look for any opportunity to get in our heads. I think tonight, they threw your past in your face, so to speak, used your old chains and cords against you, took advantage of you in a low moment, and as long as you stayed down, they had you. Where'd they get my chains and cords from? There was a sack. Speaking of which, it was still lying there in the street. I pointed. You can't see that, right?
See what?
I walked over to it and took a close look. They pulled stuff out of this bag. I wish I could see it. I reached and touched it, and felt what had to be cords and chains back in the sack now. The instant my fingers made contact, a crushing, overwhelming sense of guilt hit me. A crippling feeling of defeat. It was so agonizing I jerked my hand back. The oppression instantly lifted. And then I saw something, messy stitches in the fabric. I read them out loud. RBG. My initials? Rayanne stared at me. They're on the bag. That was weird, but not as weird as what happened next. A shriveled hand reached up through the pavement and snatched the sack, pulling it beneath the earth's surface. Rayanne, about that bag? Wait! She jumped up so fast it scared me. Three letters like the creeper notes. I pulled up the images on my phone. They're initials, Owen. It was all clicking now. And actually about as unsophisticated a code as you can get. All targets of a mass attack, I said. How do you know? She paced in front of me. I showed her another creeper note image, zooming in on the numbers. 523. She could hardly talk fast enough. Same numbers on all of them. What if it's a date, Rayanne? She sank to the curb, eyes wide. May 23rd. A month away. Chapter 36. I bought Rayanne a cup of Starbucks and brought it to her house for our mass attack brainstorming session. We weren't positive we were right about our theory, but it was the best intel we had. She had note cards, highlighters, two spiral notebooks, a whiteboard, and dry erase markers set out on the kitchen table next to a schematic of the school that she'd found online and printed. Really? One more thing. She set a leather journal on top of the office supply explosion. What's that? It took her a moment to answer. I wrote things in here for my brother, then gave it to him as a gift. I'd like to read some of it to you now. I didn't know what she'd put in the journal, but I figured it had to be important. She motioned for me to sit down. All I ask is that for the next few minutes you listen. I agreed and lowered into the chair beside her. She proceeded to explain what she called the plan of salvation, flipping through the journal and reading Bible passages she'd copied by hand. It was like she was the teacher and I was a kindergartner on a storytime rug. Not that what she said was childish, just the way she pointed to the text and moved her finger under each word. In short, she said I needed a savior, and if I prayed to receive Christ into my heart, God would forgive everything I'd ever done wrong, and I would glow, like her family. It can't be that simple. Everyone would glow. You would think, she said, but not everyone is willing to accept God's invitation. I wasn't suddenly blown over with faith, and it didn't add up to me that one prayer could erase every wrong I'd ever done. But out of the two of us, she glowed, not me. So maybe there was something to this. And I was willing to try anything at this point if there was a chance it could save me from afterlife torture. Problem was, the last time I'd talked to God, I'd shouted that I hated him. If there was a creator who bothered listening to people's prayers, I doubted he'd be willing to hear mine. But, like I said, I'd try anything. Do I need to take my hat off? Rayanne reached for my hands. You can, but I don't think a Browning ball cap is going to mess up your prayer. She was so giddy I thought she might break out into one of her drill team dances. Do you get some sort of award at your church for making a convert? Of course not. She bowed her head, then looked up again. Well, I technically get my name in a drawing for a Subway gift card for sharing the plan of salvation, but that's not why I'm doing this. I know, I'm just giving you a hard time. We faced one another, and I clutched her fingers in mine, our knees and bowed heads nearly touching. She led me in a prayer that I repeated after her, admitting I had sinned, and committing to give up my old self-centered life for a new one, where God would save me and lead me and help me discover his plans for me. It was nice enough, as far as prayers go. We said amen. Then I sat there, staring at my feet, waiting for a burst of light. At the very least, an energizing feeling to wash over me. It never did. Well, you're my witness, I tried. For me, the issue was settled once and for all. Religion was not the answer. Our brainstorming session turned out to be about as productive as that prayer. The following week, I went to the meeting my mom had arranged with the defense lawyer. Scumbags, I'd always called them, but not anymore. I told the same story I'd already told the police, but added that Walt and Marshall must have ingested something they regretted, then blamed me as their scapegoat. There was the essence of truth in it. The lawyer agreed to represent me. He said he thought investigators would probably leave me alone for the next month until after I graduated, to avoid a surge in negative publicity. Your senior class has been through enough, but after graduation, I imagine they'll come after you. But don't worry, we'll be ready. I made a fat payment and left. Over the next few weeks, I spent every second with Rayanne that she'd let me, and we kept racking our brains about May 23rd. Her plan for stopping Molech and the creepers between now and then was to pray every day. Not the most reliable action plan. Not that mine was any better. I tried convincing people to skip school that day. They just looked at me like I was weird, as usual. In the middle of May, Rayanne's parents went out of town, and I fantasized about her inviting me over and us taking advantage of the privacy. But I knew better. Rayanne would kick me out of her life before she'd go back on her convictions, something I admired about her but had a hard time liking on occasion. I tried to behave. Didn't want to draw any lust monsters. That Saturday, my mom handed me the keys to her SUV and a long list of errands to run. While driving, I got to thinking about how no one would be there to see me at my high school graduation except her. Why should I go? I had new priorities in life now, and long school assemblies weren't one of them, even if it was the last one. Along the way, I found a ceramic crucifix in the parking lot of our dry cleaners, and held it up to a creeper attached to the guy behind the counter as he handed me my mom's clothes. The guy stared me down like I was a weirdo, but other than that, nothing happened. Shocker. On my way home, I turned onto the street with the railroad bridge, the place where Jess had brought me, then taken off with Dan, after I begged her to stay away from him. Sure enough, I spotted her Mustang parked beside the bridge now. But it was the way she was parked that bugged me. Her car was angled toward the curb, like she'd flung it there blindfolded. I had no desire to get in some long conversation with her, but I found myself parking. At first, I didn't see her, but I took a few more steps along the bridge, and my heart skipped a beat. She'd climbed over the railing and was facing the rushing water some 50 feet below, holding on but leaning over like she might let go at any second. "Jess," I hurried to her. "What are you doing?" Even before I made it to her, I could see how hard she was crying, her chest expanding and collapsing with every gasp, her asthma working against her. I reached out to her. "Take my hand." We both knew she couldn't swim. Her cheeks were flushed, and she gazed out at the turbulent water like it was her best friend now. "Leave me alone." "What happened?" I started to climb over the railing, but she raged at me. "Don't! I'll jump!" I'd never seen her like this, so volatile, so shattered. I stopped climbing but pleaded with her to tell me what was wrong. "You were right, Owen, I'm pregnant." "Jess." I slid my hand down the rail toward hers, but she loosened her trembling grip. "Please," I yelled. "Don't do this. We'll figure things out." She shook her head, still fixated on the river. I noticed her clothing was torn, her skirt ripped up her thigh. I got a sick feeling. "Dan, did he hurt you?" She winced, and another downpour of tears fell from her chin into the current. "I told him no this time, but..." I'd felt anger countless times before, fury even. But this was something else entirely, like hatred and vengeance igniting in a blazing furnace lodged inside my ribcage. I'd been willing to kill in self-defense in order to save a life, but I'd never wanted someone dead. Until now. "I want out." Jess closed her eyes. "Life's too hard." She had no way of knowing what her words had just done, who she'd instantly summoned across paranormal airwaves. Suicide came crawling out from the nearby trees, but before it could pounce on Jess, the Lord of the Dead arrived, stopping suicide in its tracks. Molech rose up out of the water without a drop on him and hovered midair, his spiteful face looming in hers. His lips formed a gruesome, reeking smile. I knew what was coming. I'd been through this with Megan and lost to a less powerful creeper than this one, but I wasn't going to abandon Jess to him. He tilted his head and pressed his decaying lips to her ear. I made an effort to drown out his voice with my own. "Whatever goes through your head, Jess, don't listen."
"You're so stupid," he said to her.
"You tried to warn me about Dan," she said. "I'm so stupid." "No." I reached out again. "Give me your hand." Molech injected more poison into her mind.
"You're a used-up piece of..."
Before he could even finish, she bought into it.
"I'm a used-up piece of trash."
"It's all lies, Jess, from someone who despises you." Molech bolted toward me at warp speed and growled in my face. Surely there's no worse stink on earth than what came out of his festering mouth. No eyes more petrifying than his. But I stood my ground.
I'm here, Jess. Take my hand. Molek flew back to Jess.
You can't,
he hissed into her ear.
I can't,
she recited. Yes, you can. I swung with the only weapon I had, my words. The truth is, you can.
You're better off dead.
He lowered his gaze to her abdomen, then dragged his hand over it, smearing that familiar grungy dust over the tiny light.
So is that.
I spoke before she could quote him. You're meant to live, Jess. I swallowed hard. You both are. Molek placed his contaminated hands on her shoulders. Jess! I cried out. Too late. She let go. The same instant he pulled her from the rail and plunged her down into the water. Without hesitation, I was over the rail and in the river. But where was she? I called Jess's name again and again while being carried downstream by the unyielding current, rocks slamming and puncturing my legs through my jeans. I searched underwater, but there was no sign of her. I came up for air and water clobbered me in the face, making me choke. It had to have been over a minute now since Jess had jumped. How long could she hold her breath? Would she even bother? I managed to keep my chin above the tide, even though my feet barely touched the bottom. I called out to her as loud as I could. A growing sense of defeat was exhausting my hope at the same time that my arms and legs started burning from exertion. I used what strength I had to turn myself against the tide and look back toward the bridge. There she was, flailing on top of the water, floating. But it wasn't the water holding her up. An armored watchman cradled her. So tall, the river only came to his waist. So bright, he rivaled the sun. He waded through the river toward me. Jess thrashed her arms and legs, whimpering and fighting to stay afloat. She didn't know it was impossible for her to sink. Within seconds, he brought her to me. It was the first time a watchman had looked me in the face. The first time I'd gotten an up-close glimpse at the gleam in a watchman's eyes. He extended his arms, and when Jess saw me, she cried out and latched onto me so tight, I knew she no longer wanted to die. It's okay, Jess. I've got you. That fast, and he was gone. Vanished like a rainbow behind the clouds. It was hard to get us both onto the riverbank, but I did it. Once on the grass, she clung to me and sobbed. As soon as I let go, I knew it was a mistake. She hugged me even tighter, both of us waterlogged and shaking. Thank you, Owen. She kept saying it as if I'd saved her life, but I knew the truth. This time, I didn't wonder why the watchmen don't intervene more. I wondered how many times they do, and it goes completely unnoticed. Chapter 37. I followed behind Jess as she drove her car home and watched her until she was safe inside. She promised me she'd report Dan to the police. When I got home, still shaken up, I was surprised to see Lance's Jeep in my driveway. Hey, he said, with no hint of anger. Can we talk? I hated to admit it, but I missed having him around. The good old days when we'd make jokes and I was blind to evil's existence. I worried about him now, especially after Megan's death. In a way, it felt like he had died too. Like I'd lost a good friend overnight. As I went to slide into Lance's Jeep, someone ran up behind me and shoved a black bag over my head. I couldn't see anything, but it didn't matter at that point. I'd already taken the bait and impaled myself on Lance's camouflaged hook of betrayal. Lance instructed the guy to bind my hands. I could tell they were using duct tape.
After blaring earphones were crammed onto my ears, I was pushed into Lance's back seat, then shoved onto the floorboard. Minutes later, I was yanked from the vehicle. My head still bagged, music pounding. I was pulled by the arm, forced to stumble over uneven terrain. It was hard to judge how long or far we traveled, but finally we stopped. The sack and earphones were ripped from my head. The woods behind the school. My property. Lance eyed me like a hunter checking a trap. Then I saw his accomplice. Dan. What I would have done to him had my arms not been restrained. A group of 7 or 8 guys made their way over to us. Bulky seniors, several on the wrestling team, I think. All there to beat my face in, I imagined. I admit I was nervous, but my plan was to be a man and take the blows as they came. Dark figures darted through the surrounding trees, creepers drawn to human hostility like rubberneckers at a fatal car crash. Guys, I tried to keep my cool even though I knew I was in for it. They closed in around me, Dan posting himself directly in my face. I narrowed my eyes at him. I know what you did to Jess. How can you stand yourself? It's time, Dan said, showing no hint of remorse. Lance got in my face but just stood there, fists ready but not swinging, breathing hard. You said you'd do it, Dan shouted at him. Lance inflated his chest, but still no blows. Are you just gonna... Shut up, Dan! Lance turned back to me. I don't know if the cops are on to you or not, but we are. You did something to Walton Marshall, and it's time to pay. And this is justice? Tricking me into an ambush? I didn't deny that I deserved to be punished. I just seriously resented the deceptive way they were going about it. Go ahead. Dan worked like a pressure cooker on Lance. Get us started. He reminded me of a creeper encircling us, enticing violence. Then a real creeper dropped down over us, hovering above our heads. It's me, Lance. Hard as I tried, I couldn't pry my hands loose. Don't do this. Hit him, Lance, Dan said, or I'll do this my way. He tugged on a thick leather strap across his chest, and I saw it, a rifle strapped to his back. Was he about to shoot me? Do it, Dan kept prodding. For Megan! Lance's fists remained tight and ready for action, but he couldn't bring himself to punch me. Finally, Dan stepped in front of him, teeth clenched, literally shaking with anger. And that's when the creeper made its move, swooping down and prying its way through Dan's back, taking residence inside of him. Its shape shifted so that its huge frame was crammed inside its smaller host. The mutations began immediately. Dan's eyes rolled back in his head, replaced by devilish pupils. Then his skin turned gray like the creeper's, and his face contorted, his features twisting into something beastly and petrifying. I fell backward into the guys behind me, but they shoved me forward, right back in Dan's rearranged face. He opened his mouth to curse me, and a low, threatening voice came out. I looked around. Was I the only one witnessing this? His words were cruel and violent, even for Dan. But his mouth wasn't his own. His tongue had been hijacked. The veins in his neck were bulging. Then I saw it, beneath the surface of his skin, a scar across the indwelling creeper's forehead. Rage. Of course. Dan reared back and shoved me so hard it felt like a train hit me. He stood me up again, and that's when I felt a burst of pain in the back of my head, like someone had bashed me with a baseball-sized rock. I caved to my knees, and the guys kicked me in my ribs, punched me in the face, even pulled my hair. All I could do was hunker down while they struck me in the mouth repeatedly, calling me a murderer, among other things. The distinct, disgusting taste of blood flooded my tongue, and a black haze settled over my vision. Were they going to beat the very last breath out of me? Leave my body in the woods to rot after my soul was ripped out through my gut? As the lightheadedness got worse, I felt like life was draining out of my veins. All I could think about was her. Sweet Rayanne. That kiss I'd never get. The jerk who would. I was outnumbered and a bloody mess, but I fought back with all I had, scoring a few good kicks to shins and ankles. But then Dan dealt a serious blow to the side of my head. Ears ringing, earth spinning, consciousness leaving. And that's when I saw him, lying across from me, his pose mirroring mine exactly. Molech. His mouth moved in slow motion, and I heard a voice, but not in my ears, in my mind. The sound of a thousand disturbing whispers, all out to get me at once.
Come. He caressed my face. I've prepared a place for you.
With every nudge of his clawed fingers on my skin, fear shot through me, paralyzing and cold. I was no match for the pack of wolves devouring me, no threat to the Lord of the Dead who'd come for me. But I refused to surrender, mustering every shred of strength to keep my eyes open. Hard as I tried, though, I couldn't survive this. I'd lost everything, right down to my soul. That's when I heard a familiar voice demanding that I be left alone. Finally, the old man had returned. Don't ask me how, but he ran the guys off. They left me there in the mud. When I pried my eyes open, Molech had disappeared too. The brown-skinned, gray-haired man in overalls hovered over me, casting a dazzling glow onto the earth around his work boots.
You okay, son?
He used a pocket knife to get the tape off me, then helped me sit upright, patiently holding on to me as my spinning head threw off all sense of balance. Horrible as I felt, I had to make the most of having him there. Who are you? It hurt to move my mouth. What have you done to me? Besides ruin my life.
Done to you? You're an eyewitness to a war few believe exists. I'd say that's a privilege.
Seriously? I groaned. He pulled a rag from his pocket and used it to wipe blood from my face.
I don't get it. Why me? This is your land now, ain't it?
So?
He thinks it's his. Staked his claim over a century ago, and has no intention of leaving.
You're talking about
the spirit of death.
He lowered down, eye level with me.
Molech.
Just the mention of his name made me cringe. He was here, I said, just now.
I know.
The old man nodded. He's a dominant wicked power that patrols this land, and he is working hard to expand his territory. I looked around. Why this land? He stared out into the woods, deep in thought.
More than 100 years ago, this was a plantation, run by the cruelest of masters. Molech was at home here with him, the soil soaked with innocent blood.
That was disturbing. I leaned forward in an effort to stand, but collapsed back. He still wants people to suffer tragic deaths, I said. Another nod.
He and his satanic forces.
Satanic forces. There it was, out in the open, affirmed by a man who obviously had major insight into the supernatural. He helped me onto my feet. Slowly.
The more people give in to his deadly plans, he said, the more powerful he becomes.
It's not fair. I struggled to lock my knees. The creepers have good people in shackles, people I care about.
He gripped my shoulders, steadying me as I swayed too far to one side. People are enslaved by their own evil attitudes and impulses. Their hard hearts. Dark forces exploit that, prey on people's brokenness, thrive in a culture of unbelief.
What do they want from us?
He searched my face. Surely you know by now.
When he put it that way, the answer was as clear as the water that had gotten me into this catastrophe.
Our souls, I said.
He nodded. Cut off from the light. For eternity. I was stirring inside, experiencing a resurgence of determination, fueled by frustration.
They never should have built a school here. We have to warn people, convince them to stay off this property, shut down Masonville High.
He raised an eyebrow. You watch the world news? Evil isn't confined here. Wicked overlords stretch across land and sea until someone drives them out.
By someone, you mean the Watchman?
He gave me a half-smile. Suppose you can call him that. But no, they watch over humanity, but the responsibility to drive out wickedness, that belongs to mankind.
He looked toward my school.
You guys all run in fear, evil will stay. Lie in wait to strike the next souls who come along.
It was a lot to take in.
Then he dumped more on me. The realization of a lifetime. Last people who owned this land only fed into the evil, held rituals here.
Rituals?
I tried to take a step, and man, it hurt.
Occult gatherings, he said. Blood sacrifices that Molech received as worship unto himself. His army grew in strength and numbers.
Wait. Dazed as I was from the beating, that sobered me up. My grandparents owned this property.
He didn't flinch. Nothing he didn't already know.
But
they were religious, I said. Made my mother go to church every week.
For appearance's sake, son, and to look for vulnerable recruits.
Shocking as it was, it solved a mystery that had plagued me my entire life.
My mom, she was raised in the occult. That's why she ran away, why she's so messed up.
Few people make it out alive.
He extended a hand to help me walk. You're blessed to have her.
I never thought I'd feel grateful for my mom, much less admire her. But somewhere inside that shell of a woman was a girl who'd fought hard to survive. Harder than I could probably imagine.
The old man let me lean on him the whole time we journeyed through the woods. I ached all over. But that didn't stop me from firing questions at him Rayan style, non-stop and direct. Frustratingly, he gave mostly life principles instead of the straight-up answers I needed. And he offered no explanation about why he glowed, how he knew so much, or why the water was way more than just water.
When I asked his name, he said, "I'm not here to make a name for myself."
And left it at that. But then he warned me, "That old water well can open eyes or shut 'em for good. Best that you tell no one about it." I stopped walking, stinging with shame over what I'd already done.
"How's that?"
He waited for me to look into his face. "People know how to conceal their motives, but there's no fooling that water." I was still trying to make sense of what he'd just said when we arrived at the street that ran alongside my school. He told me to wait there, then turned like he was about to leave.
"Wait! There's so much I need to understand, people I have to help."
He lifted his face to the blue sky.
"I'm just a messenger,
I heard a car horn and turned to look. Rayanne was slowing and pulling over. I turned back to the old man.